We're not naive in this process. We've seen some steps in the right direction, but we have a long way to go.
Momentum builds for U.S. and North Korean leaders to meet. It's Wednesday, April 25th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, we hear an author's perspective on the Perspective Summit. Ethnic languages reemerge in Myanmar. A Chinese e-commerce leader finds a new market. A 3D printed house and automated healthcare. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Ahead of Friday's planned inter-Korean summit, the top South Korean nuclear envoy said the next few months will be critical in terms of laying the groundwork for the denuclearization of North Korea. Lee Doo-hoon held talks with visiting acting U.S. Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs, Susan Thornton. At the White House, presidential spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders said there will be no easing of the international pressure campaign on Pyongyang until it takes, quote, concrete action toward denuclearization. On Saturday, the North pledged to halt all nuclear and missile testing and close a nuclear testing facility.
Certainly, we're not going to make mistakes from previous administrations, and we're not going to take the North Koreans simply at their word. Like I said before, the maximum pressure campaign is going to continue until we see concrete actions taken by, look, we're not naive in this process. We've seen some steps in the right direction, but we have a long way to go. We also have seen a major change in what has taken place in the past by having our allies and partners in the region step up and do much more than they have in the past. China has taken a more active role in putting pressure on North Korea. They can certainly do more. We hope they will and will continue working with us. And that's all at the direction and because of the relationship that the president has built with President Xi of China.
Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said there are a lot of reasons for optimism that upcoming talks will be fruitful. Sung-Yun Lee, assistant professor in Korean studies at Tufts University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty recent North Korean pronouncements on suspending testing of activities banned and internationally sanctioned are no concessions at all.
So I would argue that Kim Jong-un has given nothing so far. He's simply put on a happier face and has already wrested away from the U.S. and South Korea and other powers in the region, some major concessions, for example, the willingness on the part of the heads of state of these big countries in the region to meet with Kim Jong-un quite eagerly and therefore legitimate the North Korean dictator as the leader of a not-so-abnormal country, the leader of a nation that is armed with nuclear weapons and gulags. So Kim Jong-un already has won some meaningful concessions.
Defense Secretary Jim Mattis Monday said he saw reason for optimism about the proposed talks with North Korea. Right now, I think there's a lot of reasons for optimism that the negotiations will be fruitful and we'll see. What do you make of those comments?
I think it's not in the best interest of the United States to voice any optimism, even if the U.S. sees something that I certainly don't, for example. Kim Jong-un has been planning for this for months, if not years. It's absurd to presume that Kim Jong-un had a change of heart on New Year's Day, or even that he was so cowed by Trump's threat of fire and fury and total destruction, or even tough sanctions enforcement over the past year, that Kim is now putting on a charm offensive. No, it makes sense for Kim to do exactly this. And there are precedents of this sort. His father and his grandfather, after a period of escalation, changing the tunes and willing to be engaged by the outside world and saying strangely reasonable things like, oh, we understand that the presence of U.S. troops in South Korea play a stabilizing role. They should leave eventually, but I won't call for their immediate withdrawal right now. As Kim the First told reporters from the New York Times, the Washington Post, a Harvard scholar in May, June, July, respectively, in 1972, or Kim Jong-il telling the South Korean president in the aftermath of the first ever inter-Korean summit in June 2000 that he will not oppose the long-term stationing of U.S. troops in South Korea or even a united Korea. All this is a ruse, a ploy. Kim, at the right time, will demand, will call for the immediate, complete withdrawal of U.S. troops from South Korea. He will demand a peace treaty, which, of course, would call into question the very raison d'etre of U.S. troops in South Korea and perhaps even in Japan. That time will come. But for now, Kim is creating the illusion of coming across as a reasonable guy who is willing to make some major concessions when, in fact, no concession has been made at all.
Sung-Yoon Lee called South Korea's decision to suspend cross-border propaganda broadcasts for the first time in over 2 years misplaced, and called it needless self-censorship born of the belief that it will need to North Korean concessions. Stay up to date with VOA Asia for an author's perspective on the upcoming talks. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Donald Trump says North Korea's Kim is very honorable. Questions raised after India okays death penalty for child rape. Official says Asian Games to boost Indonesia's war on forest fires. Tibetan refugees in India protect language and culture. U.S. forces in South Korea focus balance of family and threat of war. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find them on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. There are some predictions that a meeting between the U.S. and North Korean leaders could be fruitful. James Lee, an associate of the Davis Center at Harvard, who wrote the book, The Partition of Korea After World War II, A Global History, is one who believes progress can be made. He spoke with VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
All I can say is that I see and feel things that are coming from North Korea these days that I have not seen before. So I see there are some positive signs saying that there may be some real changes happening in the country. All of this actually came as a bit of a surprise, and nobody really knows what's going on. But I would say that there have been some signs of some real changes in North Korea happening, you know, rather soon after Kim Jong-un became the leader of the country. My point is that there have been some real changes happening in North Korea for years.
All through the past, there have been promises made, and when somebody came to a negotiating table, the North Koreans stepped back. Number one, do you agree with that? And why do you think there are such changes happening now, or at least possibly happening now?
I do agree that we have to be careful when dealing with a regime like North Korea, because the North Koreans have definitely broken agreements in the past. But I would say that what is really driving this this change? I think it's possible that Kim Jong-un wants to improve the economy, or at least he is maybe feeling under pressure to deliver on economic growth, and that has run into some problems lately because of the sanctions imposed on the country for the country's nuclear program. So he may be feeling a pinch, and he wants some kind of a lifting of the sanctions, and that could be the reason why he wants to talk to Trump and to South Koreans. And all I would say is that there's nothing to lose by at least having a meeting with him and hearing from him in person what is going on in his mind and where he sees his relationship with Seoul and Washington, D.C., going from here. Now, you may have heard about what the North Koreans have just said, you know, they had a meeting of the Central Committee of the Workers' Party of North Korea, and they made the statement that they're going to focus all their energy on economic development. So they dropped the focus on nuclear issues. It used to be a focus on both the nuclear weapons and the economy, but now they have made the announcement that from now on they're going to put all the country's energy on the economy. If what they said in public is true, that is a positive, you know, signal. Whether that means that they're actually willing to completely do away with all their nuclear weapons, that remains to be seen. What they mean by denuclearization, whether they just want to freeze their nuclear weapons, or whether they were actually willing to go back and completely dismantle the nuclear weapons, that remains to be seen.
I do hear a glint of optimism in your assessment here.
Lately, I see some signs coming from North Korea. The country actually wants to be taken, you know, seriously as a member of the international community. You know, it remains to be seen whether North Korea will eventually come to respect the global norms on issues such as human rights. But I think it takes time. I mean, we cannot expect North Korea to suddenly change everything overnight. I would say that it takes dialogue and building trust between North Korea and the global community. As North Korea shows more signs that it is actually willing to abide by the norms of the global community, we need to be patient with them, and we need to encourage them.
How important do you think the upcoming meeting between North and South Korea might be?
Yes, I would say that it's very important to watch what's going to happen at the summit between South and North Korea. I think that when Kim Jong-un, he crosses the DMZ for his summit along with his wife, when they walk into South Korean soil and shake hands with the South Korean president and his wife, they will go down in history, actually, I feel, as a major turning point in the inter-Korean relations, because that is going to be a highly symbolic, you know, moment, and that will send some strong images and some strong tremors into North Korean people's minds, because that will be broadcast on both South Korean and North Korean TV. And I just think, you know, that we may be in for a very surprising ride in the next few months.
James Lee, an associate of the Davis Center at Harvard, who wrote the book The Partition of Korea After World War II, A Global History, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Happening now in Asia, one of China's biggest social media companies has reversed a decision to censor gay content, a rare victory for the country's nascent but increasingly vocal LGBT rights movement. Sina Weibo, often called China's Twitter, says its latest campaign to clean up the platform will not target gay-themed content. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Once forbidden under Myanmar's military rule, ethnic minority languages are now being allowed to be taught in public government schools since 2012, but mostly with private teachers after regular hours. However, in areas of Kachin State and other regions still controlled by ethnic armed groups, the traditional dialects prevail, with Burmese language included as a second language. Steve Sanford talks to those working in the field that continue to use the local language.
Here in Kachin State's Jiaying IDP Camp School, the traditional Jingpa language is the choice for students who are fiercely proud of their heritage.
The Burmese only have their own curriculum in the schools, but they ban us from studying our own language. They only teach us in Burmese language in the class.
For many, preserving the language also means retaining the cultural identity of the Kachin people amidst Myanmar's diverse ethnic mix of more than 100 dialects.
If we don't continue to learn the Jingpa language and the Kachin culture, it will disappear someday. That's why I continue to teach language and traditional culture to the Kachin youth. If they don't learn the language and culture, we'll lose our identity and become Burmans.
Kachin journalist covering the war speaks some Burmese, but reports are delivered in the native tongue to the local population. Because of the travel into government-controlled areas, this reporter wants to remain anonymous to avoid possible discrimination.
My target is to report the news in Jingpa language for the Kachin people who live in the mountains and the elders who don't know Burmese language, so they can listen to the radio in Jingpa language and get information for their awareness.
Many of the IDPs have relatives in the army, but communication is sporadic, so the news is often spread by word of mouth.
I am here at the IDP camp and I listen on radio news more often because the situation is getting worse and many of my friends are soldiers in the jungles on the front lines. So I listen to get more news and communicate with my friends all the time so that they get the info and are more alert.
As fighting continues in parts of Kachin State for control over land and resources, many hope to one day also have more control over their identity and culture. Steve Sanford reporting from Kachin State, Myanmar.
Coming up, Alibaba sees a new market. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he expects to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, quote, very soon, and praised Kim as being very open and very honorable. Trump repeated he was willing to walk away from talks with North Korea, but stressed, quote, I think we have the chance to do something very special. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba invests in a large Asian market to the south, while a fishing ban dries up a local economy. These are the stories on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
E-commerce giant Alibaba is investing $320 million in Thailand as founder Jack Ma seeks to tap into Chinese consumer appetites for Thai products. The money will go towards building a digital hub in the Thai military government's Eastern Economic Corridor, which spans three provinces in eastern Thailand. In recent months, Thailand's parliament passed a series of tax breaks and incentives to attract foreign businesses and investment to the country's industrial east. Alibaba's digital hub aims to provide a platform that connects Thai agricultural products to Chinese and global markets. The company also plans to set up an online tourism platform. Alibaba founder Jack Ma.
I think Thailand, it has a unique position and it has a very unique resources. And already there are more than 10 million Chinese people traveling around Thailand. And I think Chinese people will come to Thailand more if we can make Thailand's tourist industry upgrade to the digital level. And next thing is that there are so many farm products, fruits, agricultural products that can be exported to China.
Ma, who met with Thai Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha last week, signed four memorandums of understanding with the Thai government covering trade, investment, support for e-commerce, and tourism. Chinese tourists accounted for nearly a third of the 35 million arrivals in Thailand last year. The number of visitors is expected to grow this year. The price of fish in India's southern Rameswaram city is skyrocketing due to a yearly fishing ban imposed by the government. The ban is intended to safeguard fish during the mating season and conserve the overall stock. While the Indian government provides fishermen with a subsidy of $63, locals in Rameswaram are still feeling the pinch. S. Rupa is a local resident.
The fish, which used to cost 200 rupees, $3 per kilogram, today is priced at 400 rupees, $6. This has taken place after fish arrivals to the market reduced. Therefore, whatever amount we take with ourselves to the market for buying fish is becoming insufficient.
The fishing ban in Rameshwaram City will be lifted at the end of May. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, a team of Japanese researchers say a small island in the Pacific Ocean is the site of a huge discovery that could change Japan's economic future. An estimated 16 million tons of mud there are believed to be massive and semi-infinite stores of valuable rare earth minerals. You'll unearth more big finds each day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in the span of only a few years, printing of tri-dimensional objects has gone from toys to buildings, and 3D printers can now print with any material, from plastic and metal to concrete, so printing houses is gaining popularity. The first in Europe is a small office building, 3D printed in Denmark. VOA's George Pudich builds the story.
Who says that buildings have to have straight walls? But for a long time, building curved structures required special skills, longer time, and large budgets. With a concrete 3D printer, it's cheap.
It's the same cost to print a wavy wall as it is to print a straight wall. In the traditional construction industry, making something wavy is very expensive. So, and here we can do it for free.
This is not the first printed building. Chinese firms have been doing it for a while, but strict building codes prevented it from happening sooner in Europe. The Danish company 3D Printhuset, the first to do it, says its 3D printing machine may be a dream come true for architects.
We're hoping this will lead to that the architects are allowed, without additional cost, to create some more interesting, some more organic shapes and forms that we have not seen previously.
Initially, the printing was very slow, about 6 meters per minute, so it took about 50 hours to build this house. But Lund Nielsen says their new printer can lay 18 meters of concrete per minute. As for the impact of 3D printing on construction industry jobs, innovators say it depends where you are.
In a country like ours, where we are happy for new technology, the construction workers are reacting very, very positively towards it, and they see themselves having a future.
The first European printed building will be used as a rental office space. George Pudich, VOA News.
Automated healthcare will soon be just steps away for customers in shopping malls and other public spaces. Faith Lapidus reports the new technology developed by a firm in Dubai aims to make it easier and more convenient for people to get health checkups.
This may look like a space-age personal transportation vehicle, but it's actually a space-age personal health clinic. A Dubai-based tech firm, Badio, is developing these artificial intelligence-operated health pods that allow customers to get a regular checkup without setting foot in a doctor's office. The process begins when customers step into the pod. Then, software walks them through a consecutive set of motions and tests, many using the same medical devices found in clinics.
Within the pod, what we monitor is blood sugar, blood pressure, body composition, which is fat mass, muscle mass, hydration, height and weight, which then that information can go to hospitals. They can monitor this information, and if there is a problem, they can call the potential patient or customer and get them in before it becomes a serious problem.
After a session that lasts from 8 to 10 minutes, the pod displays the results and emails them a copy. Badio plans to have the pods in shopping malls, pharmacies, gyms, and even supermarkets.
The pods will be in places that are easily accessible to the public. So the idea behind it is for it to be, it falls intrinsic to your life, so it's easy for you to use.
Working with the UAE Health Ministry, it hopes to make the pods fully operational by the second half of the year. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our program or stream it if you like. You can hear us on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You can also hear us on the radio. If you're in Asia, specifically Thailand, check us out on PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University. Of course, in Thailand. Thanks to everyone who is listening there today. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Jonah Cummings, managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, which includes part-time director, Ira Melman, David Bird, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.